outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey. The God Journey.
Wow, have I got a story for you. I am so excited. I've been holding this in my heart over the last few years. I've been working on it over the last year, and we're going to start a little bit of it today, but the real story starts next week. Hi, I'm Wayne Jacobson. I want to welcome you to the God Journey. Today, I want to introduce you to a friend of mine and celebrate a bit of our friendship together, but we've been working on a project called My Friend Lewis, and we're finally ready to release it. It will officially release on February 16th on a website called myfriendlewis.com. Next Friday here at The God Journey, we're going to air the first episode. But this is one of the most amazing stories I've ever heard or been a part of, with some incredible encounters where God makes himself known without Lewis even knowing it's God for a long season, and chronicles an amazing story of a man's journey to faith and of the friendship that God has given us and how it's changed the trajectory of both of our lives. I can't wait to tell you that story. It's been something that's on my heart, but the pandemic has given me the time to do the recording and the editing that can finally put this story into the light. I'm terribly excited about it. We put this into a 12-part limited series podcast that we're going to release February 16th at a website called myfriendlewis.com. You can go there now. You spell Lewis, L-U-I-S, myfriendlewis, L-U-I-S.com. There's a trailer there if you want to kind of get a feel for where this podcast is going to go. The first episode we're going to preview here next Friday on The God Journey, so you can listen to it right here next week. After that, we're going to release an episode a week beginning February 16th at myfriendlewis.com. This is a story you won't want to miss. Every episode has some unique element of how God works and how God invites people into his love and the amazing challenges that God overcomes. It will challenge you, encourage you, enthrall you. People who've been looking over my shoulder as we've been putting this whole thing together find themselves enthralled and can't wait for the next episode to appear and have just really enjoyed the story and want to share it broadly with friends and family. It's that kind of story. I can't wait to share it with you. We'll start that next week. Today, I want to talk to Lewis on the podcast and just introduce you to someone with whom I've been friends for a significant period of time and someone with which I've shared this journey of growing in God's love together and discovering and exploring it. So I want to welcome to the God Journey, Luis Avalos. Good morning, Luis.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Welcome. My goodness. We've been working on a project together, you and I.
Yes, we have.
We're going to tell your story from growing up in Mexico to coming to the U.S. to your life in the U.S. as someone who is undocumented here and our friendship and how it's grown and your Jesus journey. And oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I don't want to give any of that story away because I just want people to be able to let it unfold as we put it in the podcast. So next week, this podcast will be the first episode of My Friend Lewis.
I don't know what God's purpose is with all of this, but I'm really excited to see what the Lord has in store for us.
Our friendship began because you came over to my house, make a bid for cleaning up our house. Sarah was working full-time, and I was inundated with all things shack at the time, and we just felt like we needed somebody to clean our home, which Sarah and I have never wanted to actually bring someone in our home and clean it. So it was kind of weird for us, but a good friend recommended this young couple who was looking for some work. You got to come in, and that's how the friendship began.
If I remember correctly, I was a bit intimidated when you first told me that you used to be a pastor. Not intimidated in a way that may think like scared. No. I was like a fear of God, you know, like kind of like in a religious way, if you will.
Yeah.
Because I, as soon as you said that, I said, I cannot charge this anything to this man. I have to work for free. And I remember the first thing you said when you said, if you do not charge me, I will not hire you. That was amazing.
Well, we have plenty, and we were hiring somebody to help us move along, not clean my house for free. But we found that out because you came into my office when you were looking to kind of get a sense for how much it would cost to have our house cleaned, I think biweekly at the time. And you saw a bunch of copies of The Shack in all different languages on my shelf, and you went, why do you have so many copies of this book? And I said, well, I had something to do with it. And we talked about it a little bit. And that's when you kind of, are you a man of God? And we'll tell that story. Because what's interesting about our lives and how they've intersected. I mean, I grew up as a, you know, a farmer's kid in the Central Valley, the whole Cesar Chavez, migrant workers, all that stuff. I was not on the side of that that I would necessarily think of today, because my dad was a small family farmer. And boy, if we're going to up the conditions and all the rules for farm workers and pay them more, then my dad's farm couldn't have probably made it into the future. And so we were always against that stuff. And then I come and meet you. You came across the border in 1994, and we're going to tell that story because it's the most dramatic conversion story I've ever heard outside of Paul on the road to Damascus, which is a great story too. The way God invites you into himself the night you're crossing the border is amazing. And we didn't hear that story till a long time into our friendship.
Actually, and the only reason I opened up to you, it's because I wouldn't trust anybody. But time goes on, and I started talking to you. I realized that you were different. You were somewhat legit, if I can use that word.
Yeah, so were you.
Most people usually try to take away from you or trying to take advantage. Not you. You were different. As we started talking, I noticed that you were not someone religious, but someone who actually walked the walk, if I can say it like that. Not just talk the talk.
Yeah, you could say it like that.
When I was a kid, I have a lot of problems because I keep talking about it. I keep talking to other kids and I keep talking to adults and even my parents. I used to get in a lot of trouble. They thought I was crazy. They thought I was nuts. I got ridiculed all the time. So I stopped talking about it. It got to the point where my mom, they took me to the local priest and I told them what was going on. And the priest concluded that the reason I was having those experiences, it's because I was away from the mother. He called the mother. And I didn't know who the mother was. And he was referring to the church. So he says, as he comes to church every Sunday and does communion and does everything he's supposed to do, you know, according to the religion, he say all of that stuff, it's going to start going away. So my parents didn't take me to church. They sent me to church.
Your parents weren't very religious, right?
No, they were not. No, it was more like a cultural thing. They had this kid that they thought it was nuts, and they were desperate. So they sent me to church too, so they can normalize me somehow.
Yeah, without telling the whole story, because we're going to save that for the podcast and let it kind of unfold for people. But you had kind of an abusive background with your brothers, and that gave you some very interesting experiences growing up. Even though you weren't religious or even seeking God, there's some unique ways God was making himself known to you, which we'll tell about, not here. We'll tell about in the podcast. And led up to your coming, which you didn't really know that you were loved by God until a night when you're crossing into the U.S. and something amazing happens. And then as our friendship grows, you start letting me in on some of these stories. You were, like you said, you've learned not to trust anybody with these stories, so you don't. And then I kept hearing these stories, and Sarah and I keep talking about going, this is so fascinating how God was at work in your life, even from a young age. And then when we first met you, like you said, you were going to clean my house for free. You guys were caught up in some real religious stuff. And it turns out, as we were unpacking these stories together, you were crossing the border in December of 1994. For people listening to the podcast, you'll know, if you don't know that date, December 1994 is the day when everything in my life began to change. I was betrayed by a co-pastor friend of mine who announced my resignation when I was speaking somewhere else. And the journey where God led me on of, you know, don't fight for your position. I have more to teach you if you walk away than if you stay. And so since 1994, Sarah and I have been on a journey kind of out of religious obligation and performance and into more of a relational journey. And then we meet Lewis and Maria, and gosh, we love you guys. Just sweet, sweet couple. But you guys are really involved in a religious institution that is, my gosh, meetings 3 or 4 nights a week, prayer meetings 4 a.m. in the morning. I mean, you guys, we're watching you guys just be exhausted, but we're not wanting to disaffect you from something that's meaningful to you guys. So we don't talk about that at all. But you notice that Sarah and I are kind of living a little bit differently than that.
What really impacted me, it's how other employees here, they start noticing too that yours were different. To the point that they will ask me questions like, hey, you work closer to them. You're closer to them. What are they? Are they Buddhist? Are they Christian? Are they Catholic? What are they? And I said, I don't think it's none of the above. I think it's just these people that love Jesus and they just want to walk with him. And they said, yeah, but they don't preach, they don't do anything. And I said, well, see, the thing with them, it's different because you don't hear them talking about it, but they act upon it. They're preaching with their lives. To be honest with you, that was the main reason I opened up to you and I trusted you, because I know that you guys were different.
And we became, it was more than just you worked here, right? We became friends and we watched your girls grow up. We got close to your daughters and you guys would come over for dinner and we would just hang out with you because I really enjoyed your spirit. I enjoyed the stories that you tell. I enjoyed the things that you're learning. But part of this story is when we first hired you, I asked if you had a green card because that's the kind of guy I am. You know, I'm not going to hire someone that's in the country illegally. And I kind of was afraid maybe you didn't have one, but you did. You had this green card. And so that made it all better. We thought, oh, that's great. Until we found out a number of years later, I don't remember how long, 3 or 4 years later, and this is all part of the podcast. So you're going to have to hear the story, but we find out that the green card's a counterfeit and you'd paid an awful lot of money for a document that some lawyer had just counterfeited and ripped you off. And he ended up getting arrested and all that. But then you realize you're here without a green card.
That was it was actually really really hard pill to swallow. Because especially, I remember thinking and talking to my wife, and I said, "How am I going to tell this man that I don't have a green card?" I thought you were going to fire them. I thought you were going to say, "You know what? You don't have a green card. You cannot legally work in the U.S. You cannot legally work here." So I was very concerned about that. I didn't know how to come about and tell you. Until I mastered the courage, and after praying for a while, it took me like over a week to tell you that.
But you did, and I mean, now we've always loved that. We've loved the honesty of you and your family. Like, even if anything, like one day there was some trinket I had sitting on a mantle, and it somehow got knocked off when you guys were cleaning it, and it got broken. And it wasn't even that big a deal. It was just a chip out of one little side of it. I probably would have never noticed, but you came and told me right away. You said, "Hey, I got to tell you, I'm happy to replace this," or whatever. I mean, I loved your honesty. Early on, we gave you guys a key to our house. You guys could come and go at will. You've looked over our home as we've been on vacation or out of town at times with other people. And we've just come to really trust your heart and your honesty and integrity. So when you come to me and say, "Oh, this is a counterfeit," and I don't want to get into this story either. This is a big part of the podcast. How that for Sarah and I, we really did have to sit down and say, "What do we do? This is something we said we'd never do, but now we love this couple and we love their children and we know they need money and they're living here and there's no way to go back to Mexico. There's no way to." And I think one of the great things about our friendship is how much we have changed each other. You have really helped me see a very different view of our economy and the underground immigrant economy and how we exploit workers. And I'm not an open borders guy. I know you're not an open borders guy. Let's just throw the borders open and everybody comes who wants to. But your story about a struggle for life here and your integrity and honesty inside that journey has just been a constant blessing to me. And you've really helped me. I talk about Arnita a lot, who's really helped me find out some things in racial justice issues that I don't think I would have ever explored without Arnita coming into my life. And there's also some things that you brought into my life that I would never have explored if you hadn't been there.
You know what? The only person that treated me like a human being or as an equal in this country since I've been here, and I've been here for over 30 years, it's you and Sarah. And I remember the time when I walked, we came in the morning and you were in your office and I worked in to say hello as usual, or you usually look for me and find me and say hello. And the first thing that came out of your mouth, I was just about to say, "How are you, brother?" And all of a sudden you say, "Let me ask you a question." I said, "Yes." Then you said, "Do you see me like a boss or like a friend?" And that really, 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 I mean, it's really, really touched me. And I was like, "What?" I thought it was really random. And I was like, you caught me off guard with that question. So I said, I paused for a second. I said, "Well, as a friend." And all of a sudden you said, "Because if it would really, really hurt me if you see me as a boss." And then you said this, "And if you see me as a boss, I don't think you can work for me. I want you to see me as a friend. I want us to enjoy our friendship." And that's really stick with me.
we were already enjoying that friendship. And I thought you were a friend. And yeah, we happened to hire you, some of the work in your life. But to me, the friendship was always more important than the work. Well, at least not in the first few years, but as time went on and our friendship grew. And I'd read an article the night before that it was about two Hispanic people talking about someone they work for. And they said, obviously, we'll never be friends with them because it's so unequal. And it hurt my heart. I thought, oh my gosh, I got to find out from Lewis. Is he pretending to be my friend because he knows his job depends on it? Or have we really become the friends I think we have become? And I mean, I love the answer you gave because I was so hopeful that we had become that kind of friends with each other because we were sharing all kinds of stuff. And in many ways, you've become a confidant for some of my struggles. And I've definitely become that for some of yours and how you've navigated the world and how you navigate the pandemic even. We've had a lot of chance to talk about that together. And then we had this wonderful moment where you began to transition out of the religious life you were raised in. Again, this is part of the podcast because I think it's such a fascinating story. We never pushed on you the freedom that God had brought into our lives, but just the questions you were asking and the hunger that was growing. And then you had a dream, and that dream just opened a conversation with us. And it took you on a different arc. And I've watched you kind of become untethered from that whole religious performance and learn to live in the freedom of God's love and suffer the rebuke and the judgment of the religious community that you're part of because you don't fit in there as well as you used to. You're still part of it, but you don't jump all the hoops you used to jump through.
One of the things that play a great role in my life to see things different, it's the way you model, the way you walk, the way you talk, the way you approach things, not in a religious way. When you look at that, And I keep talking to my wife and we talk and I say, have you seen them? You know, they're different. They don't preach with their words, but with their life. You know, you guys have been with us on our worst moments and you're always there. You don't even think twice and say, hey, I want to lend a hand. I want to help you out. I want to be part of this transition with God. So that really changed me and really incited that inside of me to start asking questions. At the end, I start seeing really God's kingdom for what it is, that something he wants us to enjoy and something he created all of this for our pleasure, for us to enjoy it. And when I keep seeing things like that in a religious way, I was so concerned about rules and regulations that I wasn't even enjoying that love until I met you guys.
And even when we started, and this is only probably 3 or 4 years ago, we start talking about this different kind of journey about living in the love of God. And that you came in one day and said, can I tell you a story? And you told me the story when you met God's love crossing the border. And even though that was a precious story to you, as being your friend for 10, 11 years, you never told me that story. And you were even kind of telling it like you were just remembering it. It somehow gotten lost in the religious framework you got involved in. Is that fair to say?
Yes, it is. The way he actually freed me, he unchained me on that day. But by following certain patterns every single day, I thought I was, I wanted that back. You know, I wanted that feeling. And all I had to do is just go back and remember. And it was like God dug a well for me, and I still drink from it today. That's all I have to do, and just remember his love and just keep moving forward. But I started doing things like you say, you know, going to prayer meetings at 2 a.m. On Sundays, and then going back to services four times a week. In my mind, I was like, okay, the more I do for him to expand his kingdom, the more I will receive from him. I want to pay him back for what he did for me, for what he's doing for me, as if I had to do it.
Or as if we could. As if we could do enough to pay him back.
Or if we could, right, right.
Well, we have really enjoyed the friendship. We're going to get to share it on this podcast with so many of you, and I'm excited to do that without talking more. Lewis also had got involved recently helping some young gang-banging kids in a couple of communities learn to box, because that's how you first came to the U.S., on a boxing visa, when you were a 16-year-old or 15-year-old. So we're going to tell a whole story. And now how he's working with these kids, not just to teach them boxing, but they become linked to your personality. And these kids just love hanging out with you. And you're beginning to help them have some things in their life that they're not getting from elsewhere about schoolwork and about honesty and moving away from gangs and finding a life that's more fulfilling. I love watching that happen. I love how you just give yourself away to these kids. And at the same time, the church that you're part of wants you to bring those kids to church. You know, there's the pressure to always, you're not doing the right thing. You need to get them in the meetings with us. And I love how you keep resisting that because it's really about loving the kids. And we'll explore more of that on the podcast. You said earlier how much we've been with you guys in your worst times. And I would say you've been with us in ours too. You've been in some of the struggles that we have had, Sarah and I, what we've gone through in recent years. You guys have been friends to us. We just sit in the patio and talk, and your kids ask questions about this journey and their own faith. And I love the friendship. I love that you and I can just talk about anything. And we've talked through tons of stuff, from pandemic to the election to kingdom of God to living love. It's just been great.
Now that you kind of touched that subject, I don't want to forget about this.
Okay.
I have a question for you. Okay. Uh-huh. I have a friend talking about going back to the election. Okay.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a dear friend that he's really struggling right now. Okay. And it's actually worse than I thought, because since the inauguration, he's not even able to go to work.
Really?
He fall into a deep depression, and that's because Biden, it's president. I don't know if I should give the name or not, but you know, well, but because we don't have the president he wanted.
He wanted Trump.
He wanted Trump. Yes.
He even after the election kind of held out hope, did he? That, I mean, when the inauguration happens and he's depressed, he was still hoping something would happen that would let Trump stay on as president?
Even a week after, or even now, he's clinging to a hope that Donald Trump comes back. I mean, I'm talking from a position that, neutral position here, you know, from who wins. But look, to me, it's like this, okay? If something like that, you know, happens, I go like, okay, it's like my favorite team didn't win, right? Or my favorite boxer lost. Okay, you know, the next day I'll get over it and I move on. Not him. He has gotten so depressed that the doctor put, you know, by orders of the doctor, he is at home. That's how depressed he is. He cannot perform. So how can I help someone like that? How do you go about?
Yeah, why do you think he's depressed? Just because Biden's in power, or has something happened to his faith? You know, he's a believer, right?
Yes, he is.
And so what's happened? Just that a president he wanted didn't win, someone else did. What's he feeling inside? Does he express it to you?
Yes, he did. He actually lost a son not too long ago, and his son loved Trump. So he didn't really like Trump, but he voted for him the first time, but he didn't really thought much about him. But now he learned to love him, and to the point that, you know what, I'm afraid to say that he sees him like some sort of a god or some sort of a savior. Or because he said this to me. He says, I feel like I buried my son again. That is deep.
Oh, that is deep.
For him to compare one with the other, I mean, that's not right.
Did it strike to his faith in some way that somehow, you know, it's over, that, you know, Trump lost, so my Christianity does? I mean, where's this connected to his faith, or is it at all?
It is. Okay. He wants nothing to do with anything good with that, with God. He used to read his Bible. He doesn't want to read it. I talked to him, and in his mind, he's so depressed that he keeps saying it's over. There's no, don't even talk about that. And all I can tell him is, as a look, Jesus Christ still seated at the right hand of the Father. He is still Jesus. He doesn't change. You know, he will not change. He cannot be impeached. He's not going to resign. So, you know, he's the one that holds the key to your happiness, not any political party or any political figure. But in his mind, he really thinks it's over. And I mean, in all aspects of life. So at one point, I was very concerned for his health. But after I actually talked to him yesterday, we talked for a while, and he said he feels a little bit better, and he starts seeing things a bit different. And after talking to him, I learned that there's actually a group of people that they feel the same way like he does. I didn't know it was that bad.
I've met people that feel similarly, that feel like their hope in the kingdom of God coming in the earth was tied to President Trump's presidency. And that now great evil, because the country chose Biden, this great evil is coming over the world. People talk about a great reset. People talk about us becoming a communist nation now. I mean, the kind of conspiracy theories that are out there that I can easily look at and go, yeah, man, that's not right. But other people look at and go, this is true. Oh my gosh, it's over. It's over. And they talk about, you and I know people who talked about, getting weapons and somehow just what happened in January 6th and, going back to protecting themselves because now the country's going to go into chaos because Biden's been elected president. And there is a great fear among a certain group of people that this was more than just an election, that this was somehow a battle between good and evil won. And then the despair of that, even those who were talking about taking up arms and going to the Capitol or state governments, whatever, to try and fix this stolen election. I mean, that's how people feel in the kinds of theories that I've read. I've seen them. I see them and I don't believe them. But if you do believe them, they will take you to a very dark place, like your friend. He can't even go to work. And I'm glad he's got some medicine. Glad he's got some things to help. Maybe. Because I think that what has to happen, you have to awaken out of all that and realize what you said. The kingdom of God has not changed. Not at all.
No, no. Jesus remains. And in his case, he wasn't a man of taking arms per se, but he was a man that kept praying over and over and over. And yeah, he was influenced, I guess, by some people that say something. I don't know, prophecies. I don't know. We don't really talk about that with him. All I know is that spiritually that hurt him.
And that's where my heart goes to. And I've done some podcasts lately and I've made some people really mad who kind of feel like I've been hard on Trump, even though I'm really trying to invite people who were caught up in a delusion of hoping Trump was their answer to find God again, to find that, that he was not who you thought he was. Saw an article the other day, the number of preachers that had prophesied, there's like 40 national preachers that had prophesied that Trump would be reelected. And so now they're kind of trying to explain to people, he should have been, but he wasn't. And there's so many false things being said. And because of the media situation we're in, people who don't have good discernment have a hard time knowing what's real and what's not real. And if you believe something to be real that isn't real, it's the same as if it is. And as Jesus said, when the light that's in you is darkness, that's a great darkness. If you think the light you have isn't, here's somebody that wrote me a letter this week. I'll share this with you. The email was titled Hope for the Tired and Brittle. She said, my husband and I met you in Alaska 15 years ago. We have enjoyed your books and have been a frequent listener to your podcasts. I've enjoyed my fair share of episodes. And your books have helped me to understand that God loves me. But prior to returning to Alaska, when we met you, she went to a Bible school and learned so much about the saving life of Christ. Today, I got an email from the principal of the school who was there when I was there, who is now pastoring in the States, circulating a conspiracy theory about the vaccines. And it kind of just cracked me open because I'm seeing people who taught me to value truth abandon it, or not using it even in the slightest bit of discernment as they circulate these problematic information. I don't know what to do. It's hurting me more than I expected. The isolation of this year is hard. Homeschooling our three boys is hard. The political turn the country has taken has been deeply concerning. Watching what's happening in the church is by far the hardest. This year, the church looks nothing like the church to me. I watched my mom and her husband make fun of the Black Lives Matter movement. I watched people I went to Bible school with mock George Floyd's death and condemn the protests that followed. My entire family, right down to cousins, seemed to have bought into the rigged election lies. Most of my family is wrapped up in this. I feel so sad and so tired. I feel brittle. Every day, Jesus teaches me more how much he loves me. I am completely 100% all in with Jesus, but for the first time in my entire life, I'm not sure what to do with Christians. I don't know who they are anymore, and it makes me cry. Do you have any advice for a person whose entire church lens has been shattered? What I thought was, isn't, The people I respected, I now do not. The people I trusted, I now do not. I don't want to be part of a church that is a thinly veiled political party with spiritual window dressing. But I do want Jesus and all that he has for me, wherever that might be. Man, my heart goes out to this lady. Ah, I explained to her, I used to joke on this, Brad and I in the earlier podcast, we would talk about being gratefully disillusioned. Being disillusioned is never fun. When you think something is true that turns out not to be true, I like to call that being disillusioned. The illusion is being dissed. And it's painful. It's painful to think people I trusted are now lost in conspiracy theories and theories about the vaccine that make my heart hurt, she said, because I know it's not true. And yet now I find myself, it's my whole family, and I find myself in a smaller place. And what I said to her is, you know, being disillusioned is never fun. But in time, what you'll find is you'll become gratefully disillusioned. That when you finally settle on what the truth is, and that God's bigger than your fears, and God's bigger than what other people are doing, and God's bigger than what other people are saying, and God's bigger than any political movement, then you'll find yourself grateful, because you'll know that you know a God bigger than your fears, and you know a God bigger than the hopes and dreams that got disappointed, and you know a God bigger than the people you trusted who turned out to go down a darker road. Now, I don't think all the false prophets ought to be stoned like the Old Testament said to do, but I do feel like when people who have prophesied that, you know, Donald Trump is this Cyrus guy, and he will be reelected to a second term, and they're saying things, I had three visions about this or four dreams about this. You've got to stop back and say, okay, I'm going to put you at a little distance. I'm not going to listen as carefully to the things you say. But none of that ever changes. People can prophesy things that turn out to be untrue, and their ministries grow right on. People just don't care that those who they trusted, I like that she could say, those that I trusted, I don't trust anymore. That's actually a growing thing. Doesn't mean you don't love them anymore. It's just, I'm not going to trust what they say because I know they prophesy their own ambitions and they're not saying the things that God's showing them. Do we all do that? Yeah, we've all done that. So there's forgiveness for that. There's ability to move on. Embrace what Paul said. We all see in part and know in part. And he's specifically talking about prophecy. No one sees all of it. We see it, and people who act like they see all of it and prophesy with such conviction and turn out to be wrong, that's a problem. That's a problem for the church, and one we'll wear for the next few years, I'm sure.
Yeah, you're right. The case of my friend is that it really impacted him, not politically. I think politically wise, it's just it's deeper than that. It was really deep. It's really spiritual. So I don't know. Every time I see him, all I do is just I embrace him.
That's great.
I tell him I love him. And he's really rough and tough guy, and so am I, you know.
Yeah, you are too.
But I give him a hug and I said, "Hey, I love you, man." Okay, he's not the type of person that said I love you back, but he just looks at me and he says, "Thanks, I needed to hear that."
Well, that's the important thing, I think. You can't talk people out of their delusions, out of their illusion. You can't. You can bring all kinds of arguments, and they'll have all kinds of arguments on the other side. You just love people and their brokenness. And when they're ready to ask the questions, then be ready to answer. But it's not a matter of trying to convince him. It's just, like you said, just love him. Just be with him through his pain and watch him awaken. And when he asks things like this lady asks, then find a way to put some truth in there, a little bit at a time. Don't just, you were brought into a whole bunch of lies, because that only makes us defensive. That makes all of us defensive. But if you can say, hey, maybe your hope's in a better place than that, and maybe this is a good time to be reminded that the thing you had hoped, that's what I have discovered in my life. The things I so hoped would happen that didn't happen, it was always a chance for me to go, okay, God, what did I miss? What is it you want to show me now? Because I wanted that really bad. It didn't happen. So God, what path do you have for me now? And I think that's a healthier response than the depression that comes. This was on my blog this week, and I want to share this too with you, Lewis, because I think this would help your friend, and I think it would help this lady that I talked to. I had this email exchange with. She said, and this is Candy, said, this is on the blog at the God Journey. I know the arguments at times. I've questioned what I'm about to describe myself, but those arguments just prove our ignorance of God's kingdom. They show our lack of understanding and fear of the narrow path of which Jesus spoke. We want to delay the kingdom's reign to the afterlife because we cannot see its viability in the here and now. Yet these fears have never stopped God's kingdom from advancing. They have only deterred some from enjoying the kingdom sooner rather than later. The kingdom of God is now. It is a reality that can start in this life if we are willing to see it. Once in, man's way of doing things becomes senseless, and seeing the evil perpetuated by man's kingdoms brings compassion instead of fear. I love that statement. When you see what the kingdom of God is about, you don't look at man's kingdoms and fear. You look at man's kingdom and with compassion for those who are caught up in it. Inside the kingdom, death is no longer the enemy. A loveless life is.
I love it.
It's not, death is no longer the enemy. A loveless life is. That statement just really hit me. Can you imagine living lovelessly, not knowing you're loved, and not loving people around you because you have enemies to hate and you have a system to try and implement? He goes on and says this, there are no borders within this kingdom, only arbitrary lines on a map. There are no enemies to be found, only broken people who have yet to experience the transforming power of love. God's kingdom cannot and will not coerce anyone to do anything at any time against his or her will, yet her gates are always open for those who choose to enter of their own accord.
Wow. That's really deep.
I love that, man. That's the hope that we have. And I think for those that kind of got lost in some of the stuff that's going on in the world, it's pandemics and vaccines and election didn't go the way I hoped or wanted, you know, and then they're all the despair and loneliness is because we don't have a God bigger than all that. We've got a God bigger than the pandemic. We've got a God bigger than whatever the vaccines will or won't do. We don't have to live in fear and stir up that fear in other people. We get to instead love people and respond as God gives us the discernment that doesn't come. I think this is true. When we're afraid, or like Jesus said, be anxious for nothing, which is somewhat about fear, Matthew 6. Because when you're anxious, you don't respond well to God. Because Jesus goes on to say, what I'm trying to get you to do is to relax, not to be so preoccupied with getting that you can't respond to God's giving. So sometimes our prayers, God, we got to get this. We got to get this man elected. We got to get this done. We got to get that. We get that. Instead of waking up today in whatever this reality is, with COVID, without COVID, with Democrat in office instead of Republican, with whatever, I wake up today saying, God, what are you giving me today? And I can live in that journey. And that's no different than what you've been doing with these young gang kids. You know, they're attached to gangs. They've been in homes where they've been taught some things that aren't the best. And they grow up kind of survivalists, right? They're just trying to survive the best they know how.
Right.
And they do it often with the wrong tools. And someone like you in their life that can just love them for who they are. And what I love when you talk about these kids is you don't say, you know, God's given me this ministry and I spend a lot of my time with these kids and it's really hard. You laugh. I love being with these people. They are so funny. I love these kids. And I love that they're in your heart. You can tell. It's not a ministry you're doing. You're just loving these kids, even in ways some of the religious crowd around you. What was that story you told me? Because I love the story. You took a guy with you. A guy from the church came to go to one of your things because the church is concerned you're not doing enough Jesus stuff with the kids, right? Because it's not a Bible study. It's not a church service. It's some boxing training and a lot of conversation. And tell me about this guy that went with you. How did he feel about it when he went there? He went there to check you out, man.
Yeah, they actually, he's the son of one of the elders. So they sent them in just to see what was I doing, to document what I was doing, to take pictures and video what I was doing. And after being there,
with the idea of finding dirt on you, right?
He went to find, of course. Yeah, he went to find dirt on me and just to see what, and report back to the elders. So after we finished training, he walks up to me and he says, he told me exactly what he was there for. He told me the truth. And then he says, as you can see, I didn't take any video. I didn't do anything. He says, in fact, I love what you're doing. Can I be part of this? Can I come and train with you guys too? I said, yeah, sure, you're welcome. And that's you talk great. Also talk about you know love, right? I found out through this journey and with these kids and knowing you too that when you feel loved and accepted, you have no reason for reach for anything else because there's nothing else to reach for because it's already there. We were created with that that can only be filled but by our God, that our Creator, that the moment He came into my life, the first thing I felt it was this accepting love. It was something I was reaching for, and I was trying to fill the void with other things. But now that He is there, I have no reason to reach anywhere else, and that's what moves me with these kids, and I see that with these kids. Sometimes when they call me, it's 2 or 3 a.m., and then I hear my phone ringing, and then I look, and one of the kids is texting me, or group texting, going like, "Coach, are you awake?" And then I text back saying, "No." And two or 3 seconds later, my phone rings, and it's them. They want to talk to me. And they said, "I can't sleep, Coach." And so we start talking, and after like maybe an hour talking, they start yawning and said, "Oh, they sound tired." I said, "I gotta go to sleep, Coach." And now I can't sleep. So I'm like, no, now you're staying with me. Now I can't sleep. But you know, they're amazing kids, seeing them grow. Some of them have horrible backgrounds. So it's heartbreaking. And seeing them flourish and seeing them coming back and seeing them from somebody who had Fs at school come back to have B pluses and moving on the right direction and not using drugs or away from the gang life. It's great. Amazing. Yeah. And that's something I would not change for anything.
That's awesome. I can't wait to share this story with everybody. We'll start it fairly soon. I think the first episode will be on the God Journey next week. So people who want to listen to it can listen there. I love our friendship, Lewis. I love what God has given us. I love your story and how God has taken your life from where He has to where you give it so away so freely to these kids. And we'll look forward. Like you said, where God takes it from here, we don't know. But we're just going to put the story in the world and see what God does.
That's right.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.